Hello, and welcome to the Para Aqua podcast, the science podcast that shines a light on the newest and most interesting research being conducted in the fields of aquatic and marine ecology. My name is Joe Money. I'm a PhD student and the host of this podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Esther Eckert, who's a researcher at the Molecular Ecology Group in the Water Research Institute based in Verbania in northern Italy. We'll be discussing her research into the perseverance of antimicrobial resistance genes in aquatic ecosystems and the knock-on effects this can have on public health. Esther, how are you doing?
Hi, Joe. Thank you. I'm very fine.
That's great. How's your research going at the moment?
It's going well. I'm about to go on vacation. So.
Oh, fantastic. Nice. Something to look forward to. Is that at the end of the week?
Yes.
Nice.
That is so.
Okay. Well, roll on Friday then.
Yes.
Perfect. Right. Should we jump straight into it? So could you give us a quick summary of your background, your education and your research history, and just generally anything about your life growing up that you want to mention?
Of course. I am Swiss. So my parents are Swiss. And I moved around a lot as a child, actually. I was not growing up in Switzerland all the time. I lived in Australia when I was small and in Portugal. And my parents are actually still winemakers in Portugal.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yes, it is. It's a lot of free wine. And it's also very interesting. Actually, for a microbiologist, winemaking is a very interesting field too.
I was going to say, there's a lot of biotechnology that goes into winemaking, isn't there?
Yes. And there is even a lot of microbial community ecology in there too. Because in the end, the winemaking process is the interaction of the yeast and then the bacterial fermentation, which is the secondary fermentation. So yes. It's a very interesting field. And I studied biology at the University of Zurich. And I was there at the university when I came in contact with microbial ecology and especially aquatic microbial ecology. And I found that that was the perfect field for me because I was really interested, very broadly interested generally in biology and generally in life. And I saw that in that field, there is really a combination between interaction of species, biochemistry, microbiology, and so on. And I found this really interesting. So I did my master's and my PhD at the University of Zurich in aquatic microbial ecology and freshwater science.
Nice.
Yes, that was really nice. And since then, I have worked on many, many different projects. So I've worked in the field of, well, I started off with bacteria associated with phytoplankton bloom, then later, so plankton-associated bacteria. I've even worked on the human gut microbiota, on how diet affects the human gut. And depending on who my colleagues are and what they do, I also tend to do side projects with them. So we have really interesting projects even on cave spider microbiome at the moment. And maybe the funniest study I've ever did was biofilms grown on coins that people throw into a cave for good luck. So
wow.
Just throwed it in there.
That's very cool. There must be some weird metallic property that must lead to interesting biofilms. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually surprising that the microbiota of the biofilm on the money was not even so spectacular, but we studied antibiotic resistant genes on there, and that was actually quite interesting. So it was really a very, very interesting study.
Nice. I did a bit of study in biofilms for my master's dissertation, so I really enjoyed that as well. They're very interesting, quite counterintuitive systems. I remember it took me a while to get my head around sort of the way they're formed and the properties they can have. Quite nebulous, I would say, but yes, very interesting.
No, biofilms are great. And actually there is, I think biofilm research is so advanced. So there is so much known there. And I find this very interesting topic.
Yeah, me too. So jumping into our discussion, some of your research focuses on the interaction between anthropogenic pollution and the impact it can have on the emergence of antimicrobial resistance. Could you explain how these two seemingly distinct areas of study may actually have more overlap than people may think?
Yes, of course. I will explain a bit. Well, to get into your question, we have to explain a bit how the cycle of antimicrobial resistance actually works. So maybe we should start a bit with what is the role of water, lake water, and so on in the cycle of antimicrobial resistance. So
yeah, that would be great.
So we consider the cycle of antimicrobial resistance, the interplay between clinic, farming, mainly husbandry also, and wastewater treatment and freshwater systems. So you have to imagine that there is a lot of antibiotics used in clinic and in farming and so on. Of course, a lot on animals. And there is runoff from there. This is treated in wastewater treatment plants, and these wastewater treatment plants remove fecal bacteria, but of course they are not made to remove antimicrobial resistance. And this then ends up in freshwater systems, usually in rivers, and then in lakes or in the sea and so on. And from there, there is a remobilization of these genes. So the genes, the antimicrobial resistance genes or antimicrobial resistant bacteria, can get out of the system again. That can be through irrigation of fields and so on, so back to vegetables directly, or more indirectly, the people that are using this water for recreational purposes. So, for example, there is a really interesting study that shows that surfers that are a lot in marine water have more multi-resistant bacteria associated to them than people that spend a lot of time on the same beach. So this might be direct or indirect, of course, through humidity and so on, but somehow being in that water enhances the occurrence of multi-resistant bacteria. And so there is an interaction between the environment and humans that are in there. And from there on, it can go back in clinic. So this is the contamination part of this circle of antimicrobial resistance. Of course, you can see the part where there is wastewater, so that enters freshwater systems, and the more wastewater enters, the higher is the likelihood that we get antimicrobial resistance into the system. Plus, there are many more complex interactions that are related to gene uptake and so on. So you know that bacteria can share genes among each other. And so there are many ways of doing this, like directly giving it from one cell to the other, or also to reduce a bit, also taking it up from the environment. And these mechanisms of uptake are active, and they are usually also promoted by pollution in the environment.
Yeah, and these the fact that antimicrobial resistance in the environment can come from the runoff or the overuse of these antibiotics in our health or in farming, I think is actually news to a lot of people. I think a lot of people will think that when you use an antibiotic, it's done. And, you know, when you use it in your body, it's done. When you use it in a farm, it's done. But that's not the case. It can easily go off to the environment and cause further environmental effects, not just to the environment, but also, like you say, to increasing antimicrobial resistance. And that's a very interesting thing that you mentioned about the surfers. That's something I'd never considered at all, the fact that those marine environments can also be systems where this antimicrobial resistance can be generated.
Yes, exactly. And the thing is that the runoff is two ways. So on the one hand, you have antibiotics themselves, as you say. So, I mean, obviously, we never metabolize everything, and you can find it, as maybe many people are familiar with studies where they analyze cocaine in rivers, no? And you can see that there is a lot of cocaine that comes out of wastewater treatment plant because not all the cocaine is metabolized. So part of it comes out, and also there is contamination in general. Of course, the same is valid for antibiotics. Then it highly depends on the antibiotic, because be aware that the compounds are very, very different among each other and some of them have nothing to do with each other. And so some of them are immediately degraded by sunlight or actively degraded or just inactivated. So not all antibiotics will have an effect once they're in the environment. And so this is one part. And the other part are the bacteria themselves, because of course, all of these animals and everything, like humans, shed bacteria and shed their microbiota. And if you take antibiotics, and especially if antibiotic treatments are done wrongly, so if you do not follow the exact dose or length of treatment that is given to you, you can promote antimicrobial resistance in your own body, and those bacteria can come out, of course, as we all know, and they can then get into the environment. And from there, of course, there is a further step that is that the bacteria do not necessarily have to survive in the environment, though they may, but their genetic material might survive. So we have three levels: the antibiotics, the bacteria, and their genes.
Yeah, I see that's a real triple threat. And this responsible use of antibiotics is a real hot topic at the moment, I feel like. And just a personal anecdote was one time when I was in the United States, I saw that they were selling plasters or these band-aids in a pharmacy, and they were laced with antibiotics. And I was like, how can you be so irresponsible with antibiotics to put them in things that anyone can buy? But I guess the regulation hasn't really caught up there, but it was just really eye-opening as a scientist to see that that's what people are using antibiotics for.
Well, but actually you use it probably very often too without even realizing it, because a lot of these creams that we put on, I only realized that when I was in the field, that a lot of these creams that we use, like when we have little wounds, no? And they are these normal creams that we all, that we have these like white creams, a lot of them have gentamicin in there or sulfonamides, and those are antibiotics. So in this little antibiotic use is actually quite common, and you can easily get it in the pharmacy. And that you might often use antibiotics without being aware of that.
There we go. I think that you've just proved that I have been using them without being aware as well. Yeah, that's very interesting. So antimicrobial resistance is, of course, a very important topic for global health. But was there any particular reason you were drawn to it as an area of study?
Well, I started working in the group where I'm working now at the molecular ecology group in Verbania at ESA. And the thing is that this is situated at Lake Maggiore, and Lake Maggiore is an extremely well-studied lake for limnological research. It has been studied since really early of the last centuries, on first as a hobby, but then also the institute is there since a really long time. So it's really very limnologically extremely well-analyzed lake, studied lake, with a lot of monitoring also. And the people that were working there at the time, the microbial ecologists, wanted to do something new, something different, to study something new, and also something where you could get funding for. And they came up with the idea to study antimicrobial resistance in the environment. That was just coming up a bit, this topic, like in the, they were really, I think, far-seeing when they applied for funding to do this. So at the beginning, I think it was more to study something that was a bit easier to be funded, to be very honest. And I got into the group because I finished my PhD and I was looking for a postdoc. And at the beginning, I was like thinking, oh, this is this applied research, I don't know, because I really loved what I did before. And that was just studying the carbon cycle. And, you know, it was all really, I felt it was super interesting. And I was like, oh, this is so applied. And getting into the topic, I realized that, one, I learned that there is no such thing as applied and non-applied research, but that would be a different podcast. And second, that this antimicrobial resistance is such a super interesting point between evolutionary biology, genetics, microbial genomics, community ecology, because from what I explained to you before, this was the part of contamination of the environment through the clinic. However, there is a whole other field in there, which is that all antimicrobial resistance actually comes from the environment. So antimicrobial resistance that is found in the environment is not just there because of contamination that comes from clinic, but it actually is born in the environment. And this is very easily understandable, because if you think of the first antibiotic that I think most people know, that is penicillin, and you know that this was produced by a fungus. And of course, in nature, if a fungus produces a compound such as penicillin that kills bacteria, bacteria will develop mechanisms to resist it. So there is all these mechanisms. So antibiotics are naturally produced by many, many bacteria and fungi. and that kill their competitors. And in such, this is of course something where then evolutionary other bacteria will be resistant to. Moreover, antibiotics are not only antibiotics, so even such compounds can have different functions in the cell. So it can be that a compound that is produced by a bacterium is an antibiotic towards a different bacterium, a different phylogenetic group, let's say, different species, but for itself, it's a signaling molecule. So for the bacteria from the same species, they will take it up and they will see it as a signaling molecule and they will use it differently. And there are many of these double effects that can be that antibiotics can have. So even on a molecular level, molecular in the sense of molecule, it is really interesting what antibiotics actually are, and they have many, many different functions. So now you can imagine that antimicrobial resistance from an evolutionary point of view, from evolution in action point of view, is super interesting because you have the environment where you have so many genes that are there, a huge gene pool, all different bacteria that live there together, even if we just consider the aquatic environment, no? With many, many, many genomes, with many different genes, so a huge gene pool, with very little pressure, selection pressure for those genes. But then at the same time, you have clinical environments where certain antibiotics are selected and those are used very much. And suddenly there is an enormous selection for specific genes. And you have those two environments that are in interplay with each other. And this is super interesting evolution in action all the time and is changing all the time. And so I find it's really one of the most exciting fields, if you think about it, even from a pure basic research point of view.
Yeah, I think one of the first points you made is something that really stood out to me when we chatted about this before recording, but the fact that even though penicillin is the most famous antibiotic, I still sort of think of antibiotics as something that we create, that are synthetic, that are sort of this new chemical that we've made to combat disease. But that's not true. This chemical has been around for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. And there is a interplay between bacteria and fungi producing it. There is this evolutionary sort of arms race between producing this and being resistant to it. So yeah, I think that's a really good point to highlight, that actually antimicrobial resistance is natural as well.
Yes, though I must say that, just to clarify, penicillin, of course, is not used anymore. And because there is too much resistance around. And secondly, I think none of the really natural antibiotics are still used, but a lot of antibiotics are semi-synthetic. And semi-synthetic means that you take a scaffold that is there and you slightly modify it. So ampicillin is a semi-synthetic antibiotic from penicillin. So it's kind of changed, but of course, you know, what arms race theory is, no, where you change things a bit and then bacteria change a bit again and then change again and so on. And resistance is a classical example of that. And then there are synthetic antibiotics. There are. But even there, resistances arise very fast.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Because the mechanisms, the pathways are all there in the bacteria anyway. That I guess that they just have to adapt to this new chemical, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So we've talked a lot about antimicrobial resistance so far, but could you summarize for the listeners the cellular mechanisms that allow bacteria to defend themselves against antibiotics?
Yes, of course. So the main mechanisms are four, I think, that are currently, there are other ones, but they're much more rare. The first one is quite obvious. You just limit the uptake of the drug. So it just does not enter the cell. And in that case, it will not have any effect. The second one is modification of the drug target. So the drug, the antibiotic, it would be the drug in this case, is targeting something in the cell. And if this is modified, then it can't target it anymore. So if there is a change in the target, then it will not bind, because in the end, it's all a chemical process. There's just things that bind to other things. Then inactivation of the drug. These are pretty famous mechanisms like beta-lactamases. So those are, we can imagine, like scissors, enzymes that can cut the drug into pieces, and then it's just not active anymore. Those are quite common. And then active efflux of a pump, with a pump of the drug, meaning that it's just pumped out of the cell. And those that is a very common mechanism too, and also very unspecific often. So there are these multi-drug pumps that can pump out many different antibiotics from the cell. And these also, there are also these kind of pumps for heavy metals, for example, and so on. So
yeah, so I guess that those pumps already exist in so many forms in nature across membranes that they can easily be used to get rid of all of the concentration of drug, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There is so these kind of pumps are ubiquitous in nature and everywhere. And because of course all cells need to detoxify as much as antimicrobial resistance is nothing else. There's some kind of a toxin coming in and somehow you have to get rid of it.
Yeah. Very, very simple when you explain it like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's also why it's so I often say that there is actually no such a thing, no, like antimicrobial resistance. It's mm-hmm. just a way of a cell to detoxify, and it's a very useful term in clinic because there you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you have a bladder infection, I have to know is the E. coli that gives you the bladder infection resistant or not.
Yeah.
To this antibiotic that I want to give you, and this is not a random example.
So you mentioned a bit earlier about your previous research in sort of human and zooplankton sort of biology and gut microbiomes. So in which ways could understanding the microbiome of humans and small aquatic crustaceans like zooplankton benefit clinical scientists in the very real and crucial fight against antibiotic resistance?
Well, this is the topic that I like to study together. So as I said before, I study really a lot of different things. I studied a lot of different things in my research up to here. And one of the things that I did at the end of my PhD was I studied the microbiome of daphnids, which are very small zooplankton animals that live in lakes. And I really loved this topic. I was really into it. And then, as I told you, I got into this group that works on antimicrobial resistance. But I really did want to continue my research on Daphnia. And one of the things that I was thinking of was, well, these animals have a gut. And in this gut, there is a microbiome. And one of the things that had seen already was that there was quite a flexibility of the gut microbiota in Daphnids. So they could change bacteria quite easily. And then we thought, okay, let's see, what if the gut microbiota of Daphnids can somehow be invaded by antimicrobial resistant bacteria? And so the main thinking behind was that aquatic systems are really low in nutrients. It's really hard for bacteria to survive there, especially bacteria that come from a gut environment. So let's say a bacterium that comes from a human gut doesn't have an easy time when it ends up in Lake Maggiore, because it has nothing to eat, it's cold. There are many bacteria there that are much better adapted to it, and there is a lot of grazing, which means small unicellular organisms that eat them. And so one thought was, what if they can find a refuge in the gut of small animals? Because small animals, what they do, so plankton like Daphnia, they filter a lot of water. So water just enters into their gut, and by that, they also filter bacteria from the surrounding. So we thought maybe that environment is better for them. So maybe they are more comfortable in there and have better survival rates. And so a part of my research is focused on that, the interaction of the food web, the interaction of small animals and antimicrobial resistant bacteria, especially that enter from outside, and the survival they might have, the better survival they have in the gut environment there.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that the gut microbiome of even small animals can be so familiar to bacteria that have come from sewage or farming runoff and stuff like this. I'd never really considered that, but that's a very interesting insight.
Yes, I think that generally for such bacteria, it's better to grow in biofilms. So in any case, we are back to the biofilm topic, but in free water, we find a lot of antimicrobial resistance. And maybe I never mentioned this before, but there is a lot also in the water. But of course, there is more in sediments because they like to grow there. But so we felt like where are surfaces in the free water, and surfaces can be inorganic surfaces like microplastics. That's a very uprising topic now. Organic surfaces like small lakes, snow or particles and so on, and living animals. So that's was the topic. And this whole topic is getting more and more important in general, because antimicrobial resistance is, like, as you asked me before, how can this relate to the real fight against the spread of antimicrobial resistance, and really the rise of deaths of people that are infected by antimicrobial resistant infections in clinic? So the thing is that luckily people have stopped to think in a very compartmentalized way. So there is clinic, there's a hospital, and then there is your private life, and then there's the environment and so on. There is now more and more the concept that comes up that is called One Health. And One Health means that everything is connected, not in a spiritual way, but in an actual real way, like actual connections, in the sense that there is clinic, as the wastewater going into fresh water coming from clinic and so on is a perfect example of how One Health works. And antimicrobial resistance is a perfect example in there. And the meaning is that humans can only be well if also their environment is well, if also the animals are doing fine, if also there is a general well-being on Earth, on our planet, which is more and more an understanding that we have. And so we cannot look at, and I think it's really clear if you look at the cycle of antimicrobial resistance, it comes so clear what is meant by One Health, because you can really see that wastewater, animal health, the lake and humans, it's all connected, and you can't think of it as in different compartments.
Definitely. I think the more that I study in my own field, the more I realize that there are more links to other fields, that everything needs to be taken sort of from a holistic view, I guess, in terms of a scientific analysis. And that's a great point, that people are maybe these days trying to isolate themselves a little bit too much from nature, but we have to sort of remember that we kind of are nature. We are part of nature. I know this is getting into some philosophical topics here, but it's a very, very good point and well made.
And this is also something that now the World Health Organization is really promoting, I must say. So for example, that the One Health concept is something that is really, really getting a lot of attention, and that antimicrobial resistance can only be thought by also looking at the natural environment. This is something that is promoted. It's an idea that is gaining ground, luckily.
Definitely. So Esther, are there any practical ways that we can help reduce the likelihood of antimicrobial resistance arising in the environment? Is there something we need to start changing in our water management infrastructure, for example?
Well, I think from what I said before, and I think it's pretty clear that there is not so much we can do in like make change the arising of them, because a lot of them are based on natural genes that are there and they will arise. Water management wise, of course, wastewater treatment plants are really important, and there were just numbers now from the Olympics that is in Paris at the moment, on how much untreated wastewater is still entering into the Seine River, you know, in a place where France, where there is a lot of very good wastewater treatment plants. So there are still areas where there is untreated wastewater coming into the water. Of course, this is in the middle of Paris, but you can imagine that globally the problem is much, much greater. And that is something that is, I mean, wastewater treatment plants save lives. End of the sentence. And that's a focus that we absolutely have to have. And then the second thing is that as scientists, we can only do so much. The problem is a political problem. because antimicrobial resistance will arise and will always arise. This is a problem in the sense that it is not very attractive for companies to make antibiotics. So if they have to gain profit, they're not so interested in making antibiotics. Why? Because we know that resistances will arise very fast. And so there is not so much financial interest in there from companies that want to make money. So in the end, governments have to have policy to force companies to make antibiotics or have public health systems that make antibiotics, because antibiotic resistance is a problem and will always be a problem. And the only way is by making new antibiotics. Unfortunately, that is such as it sounds so sad, but that's it. Antibiotics save lives too. And it's really important that we have them. We should not forget that, because sometimes I have noticed that when I speak about antimicrobial resistance, people get really anti-antibiotics. And it's really important to keep in mind that antimicrobial resistance is only a problem because we need antibiotics. Because if we do not have them, we will die. And so it's really important that we have functioning antibiotics. And then there are things that need to be regulated well. So there are some antibiotics that are considered last resort antibiotics, that are antibiotics that are kept in case of really, really multi-resistant bacteria. So multi-resistant bacteria are bacteria that are resistant to many different antibiotics. And those can only be treated with very special antibiotics that should be used as little as possible globally. Because as we know, antimicrobial resistance, we know, is a pandemic. So we can find the same resistances here as in Buenos Aires, as in Vancouver, and, you know, up to New Zealand. So we have the same antimicrobial resistant genes that are globally around. And there, this is a pandemic. So we need global regulations of what we use and to keep some antibiotics to make sure that we can treat patients with multi-resistant infections. And there, because of the complexity of the problem, we need that people, that farming works together with husbandry, works together with clinic. And now we just imagine how complicated the issue is. And so it's really important. In Europe, I find that there are efforts on also. So for example, I was in an amazing cost action that I really liked, where they were studying antimicrobial resistance in wastewater and how we can monitor it, because this is another big problem. It's really, really hard to, for example, fecal bacteria are monitored over E. coli. E. coli is a bacterium that is easily monitored and it's in feces. Antimicrobial resistance is hard to monitor because there are so many different mechanisms and genes and bacteria that contain them. So it's very hard to find a target. And this is something that we have to work on also. And that's something that in Europe, I see a lot of effort in there. And then thirdly, and this is a bit more futuristic, is a really interesting thing that people are starting to consider is to predict antimicrobial resistance of the future. So as I told you, a lot of resistance is based on existing genes, genes that are already there, but they are maybe slightly modified. And of course, in some cases, that's easier. In some cases, that's harder. Just evolutionary speaking, the steps are less or more. And there might be ways that we take all genetic information we have from the environment, screen the genes, and check how likely is it that they will develop into antimicrobial resistance genes in clinics. So risk assessment of something that hasn't happened yet. And this is maybe in future can help in the selection of antibiotics to be used that have a longer lifespan in clinic. And that's, of course, futuristic, but really interesting and exciting field too.
Wow. Well, firstly, amazing point that you made at the start of this question, and you made it really well. And it's a very pertinent thing that I think we need to think about when we're considering going forward as a species, that this is the reality, and these things need to happen or there will be lives lost. It's a very sobering reality, but it's true. And secondly, yeah, that's really interesting. And I didn't even, I wasn't aware that there was this sort of like race to predict the next antimicrobial resistance. That's very interesting indeed.
Well, there might be. Now it's still ideas that people have. Yeah.
Okay, fingers crossed then.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
So finally, we've talked a lot about microbiomes and the wastewater treatment, but understanding more about the microbiomes of animals and humans alongside good waste management is crucial. However, these subjects might be seen by the general public as a little bit gross. As you've mentioned, it's hard to connect on these subjects. Have you ever had to explain to friends and family like the really the depths of what you study, and has this ever been met with a surprised reaction?
Well, actually, it's quite the
Really?
opposite. Yes, because so as I said, I used to work in with phytoplankton blooms and carbon degradation in phytoplankton blooms, and I loved the topic. I was super excited. I would go to my grandma and tell her all about it, and she would just look at me as like, "What?
Yeah.
Who can use that ever? Like, will this help to cure cancer?" She
I
really
think
asked me
every
once.
scientist has had this reaction to
Yes.
their work, yeah.
Exactly, but now you work in antimicrobial resistance, and then it gets so easy because everyone knows what antibiotics are. Everyone has heard, and really nowadays most people have heard of the problem of antimicrobial resistance, and suddenly people think I do something so useful and
Yeah, I agree.
that
I
I'm
agree with
actually
them.
life-saving research I suddenly do compared to before, where the looks were more like, here the government is wasting money, and
Yeah.
now the looks are like, oh my God, you are such an important person for public health.
Well, I'm very jealous of that.
Yes,
Yeah.
no, I would really suggest that you do at least one little study in that, and whenever your friends or family or people that are really not in the field ask you what you do, you just mention that one, and
Nice.
then
Sort of a
you would be.
keyword that you can drop, and then they're like, oh, okay, interesting. Now I see
Definitely,
it's
definitely. It
important. Yeah.
is so helpful.
Yeah, I
Yes.
my undergraduate dissertation was studying parasitic wasps, and all of the people I told about that were like, I hate wasps. Why are you
Yeah.
studying them? Yeah,
I can
guys.
imagine. Yes, exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
no, wasps. Yeah, no, that's not a topic where you
No,
make a
but
lot of
antimicrobial
friends.
resistance, suddenly their ears prick up and they're like, oh, well, interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So antimicrobial resistance only. And I mean, also, yeah, the cycle of antimicrobial resistance, I think it's quite easy to be explained. And so people will, yeah, will get also a concept of One Health and so on.
Yeah.
And that's, no, I think I must say that people love when we speak about this
Yeah,
topic.
and you've
So,
explained it very well on this podcast as well, I
well,
have to
thank you
say.
very much.
No worries. And
Yeah,
speaking of that, I think that brings us to the end of the podcast. And honestly, it's been a pleasure to chat to you. And I've really been very interested in what you've had to say. And yeah, I hope to keep in contact with you and learn more in the future.
thank you very much, Joe. Thank you for having me on this podcast. I think it was really very nice. And yeah. Of course, we will chat more. And if you ever want to do a study in antimicrobial resistance, so you can also speak with your grandma about it and let me know.
Brilliant. Okay, I'll hold you to that. Thank you very much, Esther.
Ciao, 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 ciao. Bye.
The Para Aqua podcast was funded by COST, the European Cooperation in Science and Technology, and is a product of the Para Aqua Action Group. If you are interested in joining an action group or just want to know more, please go to www.paraaqua-cost.eu or follow the link in the episode description. The podcast is produced by myself and Serena Rasconi, and the Science Communication Coordinator is Anna Gavrilovich. Once again, thanks for listening, and see you next time on the Para Aqua podcast.